This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
I'm Natalia Melman Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2. And of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme, Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, I'm Luke Jones. Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. In BBC OS Conversations, we bring people together from around the globe to share their experiences. This time, we're focusing on how AI is changing our lives. World leaders and tech experts met in Paris in the past week to discuss the future of artificial intelligence, or AI. There will be benefits, but for one of our guests, who's a writer, there have also been downsides as it's replaced some of her work.
I try not to feel worthless. I've had a long career, but now it's a struggle, and I think, how am I going to support my family? How am I going to pay our bills? So it's scary.
We'll hear more about those concerns later on. The AI summit in France saw representatives from 80 countries examine the technology's positives and negatives. In the end, most countries signed an international agreement to work together and share ideas around its development. Although the US and the UK didn't, they said they had concerns about national security and global governance. On a day-to-day level, many of us around the world are also experimenting and wondering what the future might be. While for some, AI is very much part of the present, and we'll discuss that in just a second in our first conversation. Before we do, though, throughout today's edition, you'll hear our guests refer to ChatGPT. Now, it's possible you might have already heard about this chatbot from California in the US. It uses artificial intelligence to understand and generate human-like written or visual content, learning and improving as it goes along. And it's proved extremely popular, with around 300 million weekly users. There are other apps, of course, and one in particular seemingly came from nowhere in the last few weeks to take the tech world by storm. I'm talking about DeepSeek from China, which quickly overtook ChatGPT on the download charts. That was very much a talking point in Paris. We discussed DeepSeek the other day on our weekly OS show. Here's a short extract of that conversation from Wo King, who is based in the UK and owns several AI companies. He said he was absolutely overjoyed about DeepSeek.
What this is a smaller model, a model that could be put on normal computers. That means that people from around the world who most don't have access to internet or connection could use AI in order to really revolutionize their work and personal life. That, to me, is incredibly exciting. For us, the true revolution is not ChatGPT. The true revolution is not even AGI, artificial general intelligence. The true revolution is AI that is with the individual on their device, which has little or no network connection. So instead of us thinking in this very Western way of San Francisco, huge data centers, massive amount of energy, we can now start thinking, how does this get used by a market stall holder in Nigeria, a 75-year-old person in Cornwall, the UK, in the middle of nowhere? That, to me, is the true revolution from the bottom up.
Due to AI's ability to save time and money and resources, it has the potential to transform businesses. So we brought together three entrepreneurs in three different areas where AI technology is enhancing and changing how they work. They are Andreas Cleve in Copenhagen. He's the co-founder of Danish medical AI firm Corti. Richie Mensah, a singer and music video producer, who is CEO of Lynx Entertainment in Ghana. And Wisdom Akubo, who is based in Port Harcourt in Nigeria. He's the founder of Akubo Wisdom Legacies and uses AI for an app called the Sophia Language Tutor.
Sophia is an intelligent assistant and is capable of translating and communicating indigenous languages around the world. So far, our technology has been implemented in schools. You know, the goal is to expand it to churches, to development organizations, kind of like just leverage AI as a tool for social good and for bridging, you know, the language gaps and barriers that exist today.
And is the reason for your service existing the fact that, you know, other translation apps and services miss out some of these smaller languages?
Yes, most existing technologies, you know, are built around the world's most popular languages. But we know that there are languages with very few native speakers. And so we are essentially bridging that gap, you know, for better inclusive technologies.
Fascinating. Richie.
I use AI in everything right now. I'm actually making it a part of my business where I train my staff in using AI in the different things they do, from simple things like maybe admin tasks to creation of stuff like social media campaigns, copywriting, like captions and coming up with campaign copyrights, to writing of songs. So from when somebody has an idea, they can actually perfect the idea with stuff like ChatGPT and everything, to admin tasks like some of the HR things we need to do for job positions, some of the interview questions that are said by the AI, to more of the art generation things where we're doing artworks for music releases, when we're doing video treatments and that kind of stuff. We also use video generation AI to also create stuff like storyboards to be able to present to clients so they get a vision of what the final production is going to look like. We use sometimes even website development AIs to refine some of the websites.
What do the humans do? There's nothing left.
AI is a tool, just like any other tool that has always been there. AI is not completely useful unless the human who is prompting it is useful enough. For instance, if I'm teaching a graphic designer how to prompt art, he's going to prompt it better. So the AI is able to give better results because the person prompting it has more information on what they're doing.
Okay, so we've had Wisdom telling us about translating some of these smaller indigenous languages using AI. Richie, you use it, seems like, for a whole suite of things. Andreas, you're in Copenhagen. What do you do?
We build AI that helps healthcare professionals automate a lot of the heavy administrative burden that the majority of the healthcare institutions around the world are struggling with.
Can you give me one maybe small example of how it's used?
Imagine when we go to a doctor and we get in the room, we sit down, doctor turns on a microphone. There, our AI will sit inside a system, and it's right now seeing something like 250,000 patients a day. It has infinite memory, it never needs coffee, it never needs sleep, and it's capable of taking fantastic notes, comparing those notes to other patients, cases, best practice, big benchmarks. Then it will write your summary so you can review it as a doctor afterwards, and we'll make sure it's quality assured. It has a lot of these benefits that means that you as a doctor don't spend a lot of time after the patient have left, or maybe even late at night writing up all these patient summaries.
You're all giving me a very rosy view of artificial intelligence and how it works. You must have all had issues. It must have ruined a video, Richie. It must have pulled up some dud information in a doctor's consultation, Andreas. It might have got lots of translation bits wrong, Wisdom. Do you have any examples of that? Do you have any concerns about it still not quite being as good as it should be?
Yes, 100%. Okay. There are a lot of problems with it. Like when it comes to the art generation and video generation, we have a problem that we call consistent character generation, where it's difficult to get the AI to generate the same character over and over again. So if I'm putting Wisdom in as a character and I prompt him the first time, the second time, Wisdom is not going to look like Wisdom anymore. So there are ways around it, but it becomes a bit more complex and difficult. And even those still don't work accurately. And also, even for the admin things and everything, there are mistakes that happen sometimes. After prompting five times, it starts to miss some of the information and you need to start all over again. But if the person working with it is an expert enough, they catch the problems and solve the problems.
From a healthcare perspective, I think you're raising an important point, which is a lot about trust, right? So we're putting a lot more trust in these systems. And specifically for, in our case in healthcare, we need to trust that these systems reproduce great outcomes. And that's why one of the many things we did to sort of ensure that we live up to higher standards is we started interviewing more than 2,500 doctors, which we just released a big report on. And what we find is that the doctors who have already adopted general purpose AI, like the ones living inside ChatGPT, they're already spending up to 3 hours a week just reviewing what the AI is saying. And obviously, if we replace one cumbersome workflow with the next cumbersome workflow, we haven't really moved that much. It's a really important point that sort of the rosiness is obviously the perspectives are great. But what we need is highly specialized tools, at least for industry, that needs highly specialized outcomes. And at least that's where we see our role in healthcare.
I absolutely agree with Andreas when he says we need like highly specialized tools. Even now, we notice that most AI systems are not 100% effective. In the field of translation, for example, sometimes it misses things like accents, it misses intonations. But that's why we have a human layer to AI, meaning under the hood, humans that are working to improve these systems over time. And so what we do is that when our users interact with the platform, we will find the product and the model over time based on those interactions to amplify, the trust of the responses too.
I really love that part. And I think that's sort of a key to thinking about AI. And I think something that all the listeners will find intuitive is that I personally am terrible at writing speeches, and I get a ton of help from generative AI now if I ever want to do hold a speech, which I rarely do. But if I do, I get much better results. But it's also a really low risk environment. Obviously, my family will laugh if it's a bad speech. Whereas a doctor or somebody working in a critical industry, the same for translation, where it actually matters. I think that's where we need a different kind of paradigm. So I think it's fantastic that we're all getting taken by storm and seeing how it amplifies our everyday. And now we need to think about if we really wanted for all the hard problems, all the specialized problems, all the things where we really need help, we need more people, then we're going to need a different paradigm.
If you'd explained any of this to someone 5, 6, 7 years ago, I mean, a lot of this they wouldn't believe. It sort of seems quite science fiction-y, doesn't it? So I wonder, with that in mind, where do your optimistic dreams take you on this front?
AI, especially in my industry, is getting very scary because AI can generate from video to image to sound. It is sort of compromising what is real versus what is fake. And to be able to put the right laws around that to prevent somebody from just taking your picture right now and putting it in a video generator and putting it in a script, coding your voice and making it look like you said something that you didn't say. The laws around that, and when it comes to copyright problems of AI, like using a speech somebody did when you prompt them for a speech, all those kind of issues are things that are real threats, especially in the entertainment field. So AI is going to get better, stronger, but also a bit more dangerous if we don't find ways of curbing some of these problems, putting certain laws in place, putting certain copyrights in place that prevent somebody from just using it the wrong way. Because at the end of the day, a tool can be used to create and a tool can be used to destroy. So we need to just make sure that it's being used the right way and not just leave it to go rogue, or it could become, something that we all regret.
I agree with you, Richie, when you talk about, the security and the safety concerns with AI. But I'm more of an AI optimist. My hope is that 5 years from now, at least, we should see our intelligent systems become more proficient, even in low-resource languages, in terms of our indigenous and endangered languages. Currently, our popular systems like ChatGPT, like Claude, they're very proficient when it comes to popular languages like English, like French, like Chinese. But when it comes to languages like Degema or Ikwiri, for instance, here in Nigeria, you tend to get errors. So I hope that 5 years from now, these gaps that exist will become a thing of the past, especially as we move towards AI that is more sentient, more context aware.
I love that vision, and I duly hope you're right. I think it would have a fantastic global benefit if language barriers are less, the trade will be easier, access will be more, hopefully cost of many things will come down. In my neck of the woods, we see the vast majority of healthcare providers wanting to adopt AI, but few is actually interested in doing them themselves. And I think that spills a lot about the parts of society where we haven't just gotten used to Midjourney and ChatGPT and all these tools. And I think that's a lot at work. 5 years from now, if we get to a point where this type of technology is as prolific and as good and has few errors as we expect, then all of a sudden we will see it really start being trusted in industry. And if that happens in a place like healthcare, what I believe we'll see is we'll see a lot lower prices, a lot more people having access to great healthcare. And I see AI playing a huge role in that. So you always have it at hand. So does providers. Admin burden is less. Prices come down. It's easier to insure people. A lot of all this, I think, ultimately actually can be driven from more AI adoption if it's safe.
AI entrepreneurs Andreas Cleve in Denmark, Wisdom Akubo in Nigeria, and Richie Mensah in Ghana. I'm Luke Jones. You're listening to BBC OS Conversations.
Science is done by people who constantly expect the unexpected.
That thing that we couldn't figure out, we figured it out. But now you're like, okay, this is like a whole other can of worms.
Unexpected Elements brings you the most unexpected bits.
Now, the origin of the lightning discharge we have a temperature which is even higher than the surface of the sun.
Unexpected Elements from the BBC World Service.
It's not Jurassic Park, is it?
It's Cretaceous Park. All of the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park came from the Cretaceous period.
Search for Unexpected Elements wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
This time, we're discussing the benefits and concerns about how AI is changing our lives. We've just heard plenty of positives from our entrepreneurs, but that conversation also touched on some of the concerns. One anxiety for some is the threat that AI might pose in certain workplaces for jobs such as writing. My colleague Mark Lowen brought together two writers who say they are already losing work to AI. They are Liz Tracy, a freelance writer and journalist based in Washington, D.C. in the U.S., and Katie Thompson, a copywriter based in the UK, who's also the founder of the marketing services company, Katie Lingo.
The biggest impact it's had is on the value of copywriting as a trade. Nowadays, just marketing in general is so tough. We are facing stretched resources, stretched budgets, cost of living, and people wanting everything a lot faster. And that is obviously where AI can help. So we're kind of up against that. When it comes to sort of the pitching stage or the negotiation stage, there is always the fallback of, well, I could get AI to do that quicker. But so there's a lot more emphasis on the copywriter to actually explain their value and say why it's so much better to use a human than a machine.
Have you lost contracts?
I think I have probably lost more pitches than I would have realised. I think there is a certain market now that I can no longer sort of appeal to, but certainly it has kind of changed the brief of the work that we're doing now. Like quite often we'll get requests now for work to sort of humanise AI content. And a lot of the time, honestly, we just turn that away on a sort of ethical standpoint. So definitely losing work or at least losing pitches, but also kind of having to evolve to adapt to those changing conditions.
Liz, what about you? What's been the impact?
Very similar situation in that I'm a freelance writer and I work on contracts as a consultant, and I have for 8 years, provided similar kinds of content writing blogs. I also write political emails for candidates and social media content. And another thing that I was a little surprised by was grant writing has really gone to AI. Their appeals for money. It's kind of technical writing. You have to really know an organization to write it, and you have to be very persuasive in your writing. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of surprising that places are using AI to write these. But I think there's a little bit of desperation, especially in smaller organizations that I've worked with in the past, to save money where they can. And this is the best way for them, I think, to cut out the cost of a writer because they think they can find somebody cheaper, an editor. But, you know, I've been doing this for a long time and it's not new work for me, you know. So I think I provide something extra and I can't downcharge. It started, I'd say, about a year and a half ago when ChatGPT sort of hit the market. And I really struggled to find new contracts. And I think only now are people sort of writing to me asking for originally written blogs and researched content. But it's taken a while. And I really thought it would be a quicker turnaround. But there's still a lot less work than there was before ChatGPT for me.
So how does that make you feel, Liz, that you are, in a sense, being seen as superfluous to machines?
You know, it's sad. I try not to feel worthless. I've had a long career, but now it's a struggle. And I think, how am I going to support my family? How am I going to pay our bills? So it's scary to think, how am I going to pivot? I'm in my mid-40s. Do I have to find a new career? I mean, I could learn something new, but then I have to start out again at a much lower salary. I can't imagine how I'm going to do that and keep my family afloat.
Similar to Liz there, it does kind of elicit a very emotional impact. You do feel kind of undervalued. And there is a lot of fear associated with it. You know, I know machines taking our jobs, as it were, is nothing new. And I think it would be remiss of me just to say that AI isn't going to change anything, because it already is. But I think as a topic, it's so polarizing. And certainly from what I've seen, people seem to love it or they seem to hate it. And there's the sort of school of thought that it is going to take your job, so you better get ready, you better evolve. Mm. Or there's the school of thought that no, don't be silly. There are so many flaws with it. Now, I don't want to be a Luddite and just pretend it doesn't exist. So it's a case of, as with any sort of technological development, kind of adapting yourself and recognizing what value you can bring to the table as a human, as a creative person, as someone who can go out and get facts from the source, as somebody who can interview someone, and as someone who can put their own sort of personality and spin on things, particularly for sort of more emotive content.
What can AI do that you can't, Liz? How do you rate AI's performance?
I am not that impressed by AI's creative writing, for instance. And also, it pulls from the internet without references. We don't know where this information has come from. But I think that AI can find things like hashtags that are popular easily, topics that the internet is talking about more easily. So sometimes I do use it for that on certain projects now. And something that I could do but would take me a lot more time and I might miss more topics. Sometimes I use AI to do a final proofread for certain items, which it can do, you know, but I have to still be there to watch it. It's like a child and it's still in that child stage, but I do worry about when it matures, you know, how much better it's going to get and how more unnecessary I will become.
Well, I have experimented with it a lot and perhaps in a slightly biased way because I'm almost asking it to fail. So I'll give it a ridiculous prompt kind of to support my own confirmation bias, as it were.
Is that just to sort of make you feel better or is it actually to challenge it?
A little bit. So, I mean, I did a presentation. There's a conference called Brighton SEO. So obviously search engine optimization is a massive part of it. I did one in October 2022, having no idea that ChatGPT was going to come out the month after. And it was called Content Writers, Will AI Take Your Job? And in that, I did some use cases of tools like, I don't know if you remember Jasper.ai, but where you could say, write me a blog post on this. And I gave it just really silly prompts and said, like, put it in this tone of voice. And then I gave it slightly less silly prompts and just something as simple as, please write a product description for a homepage of a website for an ice cream vendor. It was all lovely. But then it actually said, we produce ice cream made with all organic ingredients. It's all homemade and all this sort of stuff. And I hadn't given it the information. Essentially, that's what we call like a hallucination, where it's making things up. And like Liz said, it doesn't draw any sources in a lot of cases. Now, it has got a lot better in terms of finding citations. If you use ChatGPT now, it will show you where it got things from. But there is so much scope for inaccuracies. And what worries me most about it are the ethical considerations and the fact checking. Because as we've seen in the age of misinformation, disinformation, there is so much potential for things to go wrong and the consequences can be enormous. So that's what really worries me about it. So I think you can never replace a human just for checking the facts and making sure everything you put out there is completely correct.
What advice would you give to somebody starting out in your careers now? Do you think that they, a 22-year-old, has a future as a copywriter or as a journalist? Or do you think you would say to them, think again about your career because you're going to not be needed in 10 years from now?
Oh, it's so sad to hear you say that. Just, yeah, I would probably say look elsewhere. I started out, you know, as a blogger myself, and that's how I got into journalism. And I used to, you know, be a mentor to other young journalists. And I'd say, you know, just start writing. If you didn't study journalism in school, you'll get there. The internet has, you know, opportunities for you. Now I would say, look for something else. Like if I was starting out in that early stages, AI is doing that work already. You'll have less opportunity to grow and experiment with your writing. Maybe if you did creative writing, but I mean, I don't know if AI is already doing some creative work. It's making music with minimal prompts. Unless you really have a strong voice as a writer, that's the only way you would be able to find work in the future, I think.
I have a slightly more, call it naive, but less despondent, more optimistic attitude. In the last couple of years, we've actually had some work experience students in ranging from sort of age 14 up to 17. And a lot of them are kind of posing the question, well, what about AI? What's the point sort of thing? But I think it's not necessarily just about the writing, but it's all the other sort of transferable skills that come with it. That curiosity, that inquisitiveness, you know, asking people questions, getting that information straight from the source. So I think carry on being creative and use those skills in other areas. For example, I do a lot more public speaking now, do a lot more presenting, a lot more kind of camera work, because I've built on that creativity and I've kind of built that confidence. So I think it's more about sort of upskilling, but using those skills that you have learned, because if you have that fundamental knowledge and have those learnings, then you can apply them to lots of situations in everyday life.
Writers Katie Thompson in the UK and Liz Tracy in the US, both navigating the challenges brought by generative AI to their work and preparing for the future. We wish them all the best. They mentioned AI and fact-checking, by the way, and in fact this week a BBC investigation found that four major AI chatbots inaccurately summarised news stories from the BBC website. One of those chatbots was ChatGPT. The company behind it, which is called OpenAI, said it would continue to work to enhance its search results. I'm Luke Jones, and from the BBC World Service, you've been listening to The Documentary.
Science is done by people who constantly expect the unexpected.
That thing that we couldn't figure out, we figured it out. But now you're like, okay, this is like a whole other can of worms.
Unexpected Elements brings you the most unexpected bits.
At the origin of the lightning discharge, we have a temperature which is even higher than the surface of the sun.
Unexpected Elements from the BBC World Service. It's not Jurassic Park, is it?
It's Cretaceous Park. All of the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park came from the Cretaceous period.
Search for Unexpected Elements wherever you get your BBC podcasts.